You're listening to the Sports Community Podcast, the show dedicated to improving the lives of sports volunteers all around the world. Here's your host, Steve Pallas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sports Community Podcast. Today's interview is with one of Australia's sporting royalty, which probably very few people have heard of. Our interview today is with Simone Werne, who is just amazing, amazing, amazing to listen to, amazing to learn from. So Simone started off as an athlete, as a female baseballer, and she became one of the best female baseballers in the world. She was a pitcher. So Simone is one of Australia's most decorated ball players, male or female. She made the 2006 Women's Baseball World Cup World Team. She's been an elite player at baseball for many, many years. And in 2012, she was inducted into the Australian Baseball Hall of Fame. She's the youngest person to be inducted into the Australian Baseball Hall of Fame, and also the first female to be inducted. But that's not all. So not only has Simone been an elite baseballer, but she then moved and had been in coaching all her life, but moved into elite coaching, taking on the role firstly as the pitching coach for the Australian team, and then for 6 years she was the Australian Women's Baseball Team Manager, which is effectively the coach of the Australian Women's Baseball Team. Today, having retired from that role only recently, she now has moved into the high performance management, and she's for Softball Australia. She's the high performance manager, preparing the girls for or creating the environment that hopefully brings us a medal in the 2020 Olympics when softball rejoins the 2020 Olympics in Japan. So, if that's not impressive enough, being an elite player, an elite coach, and now an elite sports administrator, through pretty much her whole adult life, from her early 20s onwards, for 12 years, she was the coach of, she was the president of the Springvale Lions Baseball Club. So a men's and women's baseball club and boys and girls baseball club in one of the southeast suburbs of Melbourne. So Simone has just a wonderful perspective on sport from the community sport level, the elite pathway level, and then that ultimate environment competing in world championships and Olympics. So I'm really, really excited to talk to Simone and today and see what we can learn from Simone about how do we create, or what goes into making an elite sports environment within, say, a club? And what do we need if we want to do that within our club? So really, really looking forward to that discussion. But before we introduce Simone, I just wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping. The show notes for today's interview, so if you want to go back and see more information, get the links to Simone and those sorts of things, will be on the Sports Community website. So just go to sportscommunity.com/podcasts/2020-07. So that's 2020-07. This is the seventh podcast for 2020, which is amazing. Your feedback to the first six have been fantastic and been really encouraging. And they've also given us lots of great ideas, or our listeners have given us lots of great ideas on future podcast episodes. So thank you for that, and keep them coming. And before we introduce Simone, I just need to thank, like I always do, the sports community members, because without the sports community members doing free resources like our podcasts and a lot of the information on our website just would not be possible. So to our sports community members, thank you so much. To those listeners that have become members, thank you so much. It's just brilliant and it keeps us going. So if you love what we do in the podcast, if you want to help us a little bit, go to the website, sportscommunity.com.au, have a look for the membership banner within the on the homepage, click in, check it out, and we'd love for you to be a sports community member as well. without any further ado, let's introduce Simone Wern to the conversation. Simone Wern, welcome to the Sports Community Podcast.
Good morning, Steve. It's great to be here and I'm excited to be talking with you guys today.
Well, thank you very much for sparing us a little bit of your time. It's not often we get to talk to Australian sporting royalty. So in my research, I saw in 2013 you were nominated as one of the top 100 sportswomen of all time. That's a fair accolade.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I've never been a big fan of online voting systems. I like to rather look at things that you've accomplished that are real, Steve, and written down on paper in the history books because of what you've achieved and what you've done on the field or off the field. But yeah, look, accolades like that, you never sort of play for them or coach for them, but they're always lovely to receive all the same.
Well, and I guess that it's an indicator of your journey, which is phenomenal. Firstly, as a player, then as a coach, and really now going into the administration side, and I guess you've got this unique insight that you are so deeply entrenched in community sport, but also at the elite level. So we'd love to explore that. But as we get to chat over the next half an hour, but baseball, like, it's not a traditional female sport, which I bet you've never heard that before, but it's not a traditional female sport. How did you get into it all those years ago?
Well, it's interesting that you say it's not a traditional female sport because in Australia it's not really a traditional sport at all.
Fair point.
So, but really heavily family connection, Steve. That's how I got involved. So my parents actually met through baseball. My dad was a player back in his younger days, and my mum was she was the scorer. Her dad was the coach. So my grandfather was the coach, my mum was the scorer, and my dad was a player, and that's how they initially met. So I had no say in it, to be honest.
Yeah.
It sort of transpired through, you know, it's like when you're born and your parents barrack for the Hawks or the Pies or the Blues, you just end up, that's where you follow, and I've loved my involvement in the game over a long period of time, and certainly love that my family have been involved with me.
Yeah, well, in our family, they are forced to barrack for the Tigers. So, you came into baseball through the family connection, fell in love with the game, but it's not a normal thing for a young 20-something-year-old to then all of a sudden take on the presidency of their local sports club, men's and women's sports club. And if that's not unique enough, to stay in the role for over a decade is significant as well. How did that off-field side come about as well? Or did you just get told by your dad you were doing it?
Well, it's a good question, and now that you mention it, that's a little bit how it actually occurred. So I really remember, I've got a really vivid memory of this. I was 15 at the time, and my playing days in the seniors had just begun. So women's baseball in Victoria began back in 1994-95. So I was just 13 turning 14 at the time. And 12 months into my journey in the seniors, we had no coach who wanted to coach the women. We had a really struggling program. We had barely 9 players on the field. And it was a real, real tough slog at the time. And I went to my dad and said, look, can you please come and help coach? And he'd coached me a lot through my juniors. So I was quite obviously familiar with having him around. And he was really great with all the players and everything. And he said, well, I'll do you a deal.
Oh.
I'll come and coach if you coach one of our under 12 teams and if you do a little bit of work around the club. And I said, deal, done. And that's how it all transpired all those years ago. So as I said, I think that was 95 that happened. I was 14 going on 15 and I started coaching the juniors. And what I realised was that I actually loved it. It began as a bit of a chore for, you know, when you're 15, you don't really want to give up your Friday nights and go down and be coaching the little 8, 9, 10-year-olds. But I loved it. I really, really loved it. And I started to learn more and more about the actual game and about myself as a person. And I loved that journey. And it was quite challenging. But that's how it sort of began.
And I think there's a lesson we can take out of this for clubs and volunteers and committee members, and in that concept of creating that culture of volunteering. Like, you were put on that journey. It was deliberate. You were put on that journey. The seed was sown all those years ago. To a degree, the expectation was set, and maybe not to reign for a decade, but the expectation to contribute to the club was set at a very early age. And I think that's really important that we start to set that expectation in all the players at the club, but especially the kids, that at some stage they will have to contribute to the running of the club.
It is. Look, it's a really important part of it, Steve, and it's something that I continue as a coach and an administrator down at Springvale to try and push through to our younger players. I mean, that, to be honest, we all get involved in clubs because it's a place that where we belong. It's a, you know, yes. And in this case, this was a place where I was growing up in front of everyone around me, and that was, it was like my family. It was my second family. And irrelevant of the family connection, I have a lot of great friends I've had for a long period of time through the club, and people that I know I probably haven't seen for years, but I could still call them and
yes,
they'd do me a favour or they'd help me out because I grew up in that space. And it was a great place and sense of belonging for me down there. And I felt safe and I felt included and I felt wanted. And we all want to feel like that. So, you know, it is important that people understand that being part of a club is more than just turning up. And, you know, some people will always just turn up and that's how it works. But there is an opportunity for it to be much, much more than that. And I love the idea that, you know, you can come into a club and you can really become part of much, much more than just a place where you play sport.
Yeah, or much more than the team that you play in. Yeah, unquestionably, couldn't agree more. You kind of get to look through sport through so many different lenses, if you like, the elite coach, now the elite sport administrator, but you've also, you know, heavily involved in community sport. How have you seen the perceived recent phenomenon that women are now getting involved more in traditionally male sports. Has that made an impact in baseball? Have you seen a flow-on effect from that we've seen coming out of the footballs and the cricket and those sort of traditional male sports or not so much?
It's an interesting question because from a baseball and probably a softball point of view, it is actually becoming more difficult in this landscape, Steve, just because it's so saturated and there's so much stuff going on and there is a lot of women's opportunities now in sport. You know, when we look at AFLW and we look at cricket and tennis and golf and all the other things that are happening in rugby and basketball and netball, it's full on and it's amazing. It's fantastic. As a sports lover,
yeah,
it's phenomenal. You know, I've set my recorder. I've got a baseball program tonight, but I'll come home and watch the Pies. I think it's the Pies Blues in the AFLW tonight before State of Origin. So
yep.
I've got my Foxtel recorder on. But, you know, it's interesting. A few weeks ago, I walked down to St Kilda's first home game in the AFLW. And my thought on the game at the time and for the past few years that it's been around was really, what is this? Because as a football lover, I was struggling to watch it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't necessarily sure where it was going or what was happening. And I went down to this game. I was just telling a story on the weekend, actually. And I saw all these little girls in St Kilda jerseys.
Hmm.
With a Sharon in their hand,
yep.
With their dad, with their brother, And, you know, it was a lockout. There was over 8,000 people there. And I remember walking home a couple of weeks ago and just thinking, it's not about the game. It's not about the skill level, and it's not about the results or how many goals they kick. This is just amazing as a kid, as a little girl, and more importantly, as a little boy growing up in a world where girls play footy. And it just, it was almost like this moment of realization where I thought, this is just so cool for girls and for boys and for
society.
And for people in Australia and around the world. But, you know, I keep thinking about it, Steve, now, like what would my childhood have been like if I could go with my dad to watch girls play footy? And where would I have gone in my sporting career? I'm not sure, but it's really interesting. I'm not sure where it's going to go for baseball and softball. As I said, it's really saturated and there's a lot going on, but obviously the sky's the limit now and AFLW's up the top there and we're all trying to follow on with the success of that.
Well, one of the things I think that we're all hoping happens is when we look at sports participation figures, girls and women are so underrepresented. So now that there's so many more choices, then potentially that will open up the pathway for those that traditionally or may not have participated to participate, which is really exciting. As a dad of three daughters, it's really exciting that they've got so many choices, so much support. Their sporting role models are now can now be, and they always have been able to be, but they're now front and center. Can be females, which is just fantastic, I believe. And that's not just for the daughters; it's for the sons as well. That sporting role models can be equal. I want to talk about one of the things that us sports tragics and those involved in community sport really don't get a look in very often to is into elite sport. And you've been the position of coach or manager is the terminology in baseball of the Australian women's baseball team for what was a 6-year period, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so 3 World Cups. So, like, you're taking the team to the pinnacle of competition. What is an elite? When we hear this, it's an elite sporting environment. You know, what does that look like for softballers now that you're creating that environment in softball and the environment you've come from in baseball? What is an elite training environment?
Look, it's probably a little bit different from a baseball point of view to a softball point of view, although obviously they're both high performance environments and they are the pinnacle, they're elite sport in their own right. Baseball for women is not professional in Australia and it's not even semi-professional, whereas from a softball point of view, we have some professional players, we have some semi-professional players, and due to obviously Olympic qualification, we've got some girls who've either resigned from their jobs or taken a leave of absence, and they're technically full-time athletes at the moment. So the landscapes are still very different from an environment point of view. But I mean, there's obviously some really clear areas in the high-performance environment that are relevant to both. I think the innovation at the moment is a big one. I mean, we track everything we do. The athletes are filling in wellness surveys every day. We track their sleep. We track how many swings they take in batting practice. We track how many times they throw a ball. They're in the gym and we track how much weight they're lifting each day. And we're tracking their load of what they're doing each week and how we need to adjust it a week later to ensure that when they get out on the field, they succeed to the best of their ability. So that innovation and the technology component, that's huge right now. And that's something that we didn't necessarily have access to through baseball, or if we did, it was a little bit more limited. But in the softball space now, and obviously leading into Tokyo, that's a big part of it. And the players have really bought into that. They're really excited because this is stuff that they have potentially not had access to in the past, or, you know, they haven't really been upskilled or provided information and knowledge on how to best utilise it.
So what's coming from that information? Like if we're looking at sleep, for instance, like how are you using that information in the elite scenario?
Well, the biggest thing, I mean, sleep is the number one most important part of recovery. So from a sports person's point of view, if you want to play at the highest level and you're training, well, you shouldn't be training every day, but you're training pretty much every other day, sleep is the number one way to assist your body in recovering and your mind to a degree. So if you're not getting the correct amount of sleep, or you're not sleeping with a routine. So when I say routine, I mean you're going to bed at a similar time each night, waking up at a similar time each day, then your body just won't recover. And the end result is you'll probably still play and you'll potentially still succeed to a degree, but will you reach the absolute pinnacle as a sports person that you could if you were sleeping at a rate that you should be with the proper routine? Well, you just won't. And research has provided a lot of information around that, Steve. So the number one recovery method in sport for all sports people, irrelevant if it's baseball or softball, is sleep. And it's still, you know, it's a big issue at the moment, particularly with the younger generation because of technology. So everyone's got a phone, everyone's got an iPod, everyone's got Netflix, and everyone's going to bed watching these you know, got their faces in phones or their you know, Netflix and chill, and we don't get to sleep as quickly as we should, or we don't get to sleep at a reasonable hour, and then we're expecting them to get up at 5 o'clock, go to the gym, lift heavy weights, you know, go do some sprints, get on the field, take batting practice, and it's just not they're not going to get the maximum benefit out of all of that work if they're not sleeping.
I think you've just discovered why my elite sporting career didn't necessarily take off. So what you're saying is playing the game on a Saturday and then heading to the bar to enjoy the other half of the club environment, which is the social atmosphere, and then maybe getting home from the nightclub at 3 o'clock is not a great environment to be looking at a performance. Okay,
that makes sense. Probably not.
Okay, it may not be the only reason, but. Okay, so sweet. So we hear about this concept of wellness, and I'd love that you just went through those range of things. But we hear about this concept of wellness, and often football players or sports people walk into their training environment, and the first thing they've got to do is, you know, say, fill in some measures on how they're feeling for the day. Just take us through that concept. How does that work in practice? And how are you using that info?
Well, just like the sleep that we're measuring, we're also measuring wellness, and we do that daily. And the biggest reason behind that is very similar to the sleep. So if a player has got some things going on off the sports field or off the diamond, you know, maybe there's some stressful things going on at work, you know, maybe they've got some issues paying some bills, or maybe they've got some relationship issues or some issues with their family, it's difficult to turn up and try and carry out what they need to in that high-performance environment, you know, to the best of their ability. And potentially what happens, Steve, is that can open you up to injury.
Yeah.
Can open you up to withdrawing from your commitment. It can open you up to missing a few sessions, and suddenly it can spiral from there. So in a similar way to how we're measuring sleep, you know, the athletes will fill out a survey every day, and look, just the talks about how they're feeling and if they feel like they're progressing in their training, or if they feel like there's a few roadblocks and potentially, you know, what they may be. And then from there, you know, there can be conversation. And this is one of the great things that I love about high performance sport in 2020 is that we can all have conversations. So I know back when I was a player, you just didn't go to a coach and say, oh, I'm not feeling well, or, you know, I've had these issues going on, because you were really worried that that would affect you getting into the team or getting into the starting lineup. But these days, we just understand how important it is, and we're open to communication and having those conversations, which is really, really important.
Yeah. So then moving away from the feeling side of performance and coming into the practical side, the swinging, the throwing, the weightlifting, when mm-hmm. you started monitoring, what did you find that you had to increase loads or decrease loads, and kind of what's your perspective or perception of community sports? Are they too heavily loaded, not loaded enough? Like, what was the finding in that scenario?
Well, that's interesting, because it's an ongoing system, I guess, and it's ongoing research. So the information that we're collecting at the moment, we believe potentially is going to become more important for 2021 to 2028, you know, potential yep. Olympic athletes, more so than it is going to be important for this group. But at the moment, we can look at that information each day if we want, but usually monitor it weekly. And we may see someone's, you know, only taken 30 swings, and that may lead to, as I said, a conversation of, well, yeah, I've been working a lot, or I can't get to practice, or maybe they're taking 300 swings and we think that's too many. So again, a conversation can be had around, how do we adjust your program, and what else can we do to assist you in getting your work in but not overloading you. So that there's a lot of questions that come out of it, but it's a really great way of being able to monitor and adjust on the go. So we can look at this information anytime we want, and as I said, it's being input every day by the athletes, and they've been fantastic, and they love it, because they get to see what they're doing and over time how they're progressing and developing as a player.
So there's no clash, if you like, between sports science and the athletes themselves, that they're embracing each other?
Oh, I think they've absolutely embraced it. They love it. It's different, it's new, and it's something they haven't had access to before, so they are loving it. I'm not sure I answered your question about community level sort of stuff, but I don't know where it's going to go from a community level at this point. I know it'll play a role in some capacity, but there's just so much need and want for change and a bit of creativity and innovation in the community space too, Steve. So I have no doubt that stuff like this will make its way into club-based sports, but at what degree and how that sort of kicks off, I'm not sure yet.
So from that perspective, what have you then taken back to your beloved Springvale Lions? Any of this, that sort of methodology?
Not really. I mean, for me, the biggest things that I've been able to take from a high-performance point of view, you know, there's a real structure and stability in the high-performance environment, and we rely on that. So there's a lot of different people collaborating, different ideas, trying to find the best way forward. And that may be with taking risks around some innovation and technology, or changing up an individual program, or bringing in a new coach or a new person who can provide something that maybe we haven't looked at before. They're the types of things that I sort of bring to my club. And I'm really aware that not everybody at the club, in fact, probably 95% of people who turn up to my club, they don't really care about high-performance sport. They don't really want to train five times a week or even three times a week. They don't want to be entering data into an app every day. You know, they don't want me to monitor their sleep, because they do want to go to the pub and have a couple of beers after the game. And that most of our players, particularly at our club, they're not really interested in that high performance stuff. But there's certainly things, you know, like the passion and commitment and the attitude from high performance sport that completely resonates and is relevant to club-based sport. And I always try and, you know, bring that to the club-based environment for sure.
So you did, mentioning the other weakness might not be just lack of sleep in my elite career, but also hydration or type of hydration. So hydration and nutrition, how big a part do they play in elite sporting performance?
Yeah, so when you're talking about, we talked about sleep being the number one for recovery, nutrition's number two. So very closely
behind. Start to explain a whole lot of things at the moment about my sporting career.
And so that is, look, that's certainly something that is becoming a necessity from a club-based environment as well, and they sort of marry up. But the nutrition, from a high-performance point of view, really important, and where our players are, as I said, they're pretty open to being educated and to learning more about that, and they've been really great in putting their hand up and saying, we don't really know enough about this. Can you provide us with some assistance? And we've been doing that. But from a club point of view, I think there's a lot we can do in that space. You know, historically, when I was a kid, you go to the canteen and you buy a hot dog or a pie or, you know, a couple of sausage rolls and a dim sim and, you know, can of Coke and you're on your way. But
Gatorade, you know, if you're being healthy.
Well, absolutely. Gatorade full of sugar and you're healthy.
Yes.
You know, these days it's very different to that, and we need to be promoting, you know, healthy bodies and good nutrition. So there's a lot of things that we're trying to do, and it is sometimes change is well received in a club, and sometimes it's not, as you very well know. So
yes.
You know, sometimes things can be slow in how you implement them, but that's certainly something we continue to look at from our club, because we want our kids and even our older players to learn more about the importance of nutrition, and it's something we're pretty committed to.
Yeah, fantastic. So it's interesting, isn't it? Because we think high performance, we think technology, we think analytics, and I'm going to ask you about that in just a tick, but really the two key platforms of the high tech elite high performance environment is sleep, hydration and nutrition and well-being. Which are all in the control at community club level. Anyone can be really starting to take an interest in those areas and create some improved environments, and regardless of the sport, the club, the financial state of the club, et cetera. So that's really interesting learning.
It is, and look, there's a lot happening in the wellbeing space. We've got a fantastic athlete wellbeing manager at Softball Australia who's very heavily involved in our program and involved in high-level sport. And she's brought a new sort of, I suppose, meaning to wellbeing. It's not about, you know, having to think about when you're in trouble or when something's going wrong. Well-being's every day, you know, and committing to speaking up and committing to having ongoing conversation about yourself doesn't mean that, you know, you're not a strong person or you're not a healthy person. It just means that you're looking after yourself and those around you. And I think that's an important message that we can all promote, not only from a high performance point of view, but from a club point of view.
Yeah, and because the key to clubs is social relationships, isn't it? So that's absolutely true, and it brings it just front of mind, which is great. So I'm really conscious of your time, but I do want to explore the technology side of it. So we're seeing under 12 teams running around with GPS monitors, you know, tucked in their jumpers, and there's all sorts of video tools now that are converting video into analysis and statistics and those sorts of things. So how do you use those sort of technological tools in the high performance area, if at all?
Yeah, well obviously the biggest one for us is video. So we use a lot of video, and the beauty of video is that obviously everything now is online. So you can get your video done, you can cut it up. We've got some great video analysts who work with us who cut up our video, code it through Sports Code.
Yep.
And you can pretty much click on, you know, we can send links, they can click on any player and it goes to all their at-bats or all their pitches that they've thrown in a game, and or specifically highlights a certain pitch. You know, there's a lot of that enough happening in our space, particularly from a baseball and softball point of view, because we want our hitters to be able to go back and look at their at-bats, look at what pitch they did hit, and if they hit it well, or the pitch that they didn't hit that we think they could hit well, and understanding, you know, a bit of a situational awareness of what pitch they should be looking for or shouldn't be swinging at. So that's a huge one from a softball and baseball point of view. And that really, that comes back down to club-based stuff as well. We use video a lot. So everybody has an iPhone. And if they don't have an iPhone, there's one in 100 have a Samsung or another type of phone. So, you know, you can, there's programs, apps on your phone free of charge where you can take a video and it basically you can slow-mo it, you know, to the nth degree. You can draw lines on it. You can look at angles. You can do anything you want. It costs you nothing. And anyone can use it. So we bring that out at our club very regularly because we find the best way for the kids to learn is by looking at what they're doing and seeing themselves in action. So that's certainly something that is high performance and club-based for sure and really relative.
Yeah, cool. So video is, but as you say, the video is just, using the technology that's just readily available on the phone. So again, creating an improved performance for some parts of your club isn't out of the realms of reality for these clubs. I mean, these tools and things that you're really talking about are anyone can access.
That's right. So one of the big things, obviously, from a club point of view is that we don't have the funds to be going out and purchasing expensive equipment. And, you know, we don't need to in this case because this is a way that we can really have a big impact on the development of players and of coaches. This is a great coaching tool as well, obviously. We don't have to go out and spend a lot of money. You don't have to have high-tech gadgets stored in your change rooms and get insurance and deal with any of that stuff. You know, you can just turn up, use your phone, and often clubs will have a TV. You can hook the phone up to the TV in the club rooms and you can go in, have a very healthy, nutritious meal, Steve, and you can watch your video and talk about it. And it's a really great opportunity. And it's really cool from a club point of view with teams because it creates that culture and you know, you get the team in there watching the video together and you create discussion and conversation and that can be really fun as well.
Yeah, it is. I've seen that a lot used in clubs that they might record the game from match day on the weekend and on the night of training where they might have a meal afterwards, they then play the game, not as a training, but just as entertainment. And everyone's there, everyone's watching, everyone's commenting, everyone's a commentator, everyone's a critic, everyone's an analyst, and it's a great social bonding team sort of thing that is very popular. Even one of a couple of years ago, our local pub here used to play on one of the nights during the week. I think it was a Tuesday night, used to replay a couple of the games of the local footy, and people would come in and watch the replays of the local footy in the pub. And that was purely social. So it's a great way to create social cohesion as well.
Absolutely. It's great.
Yeah. Simone, we could talk, and we do talk about these things relatively regularly, but we could talk for hours. But I thank you so much for your time, giving us a bit of a look inside an elite training environment. It certainly went a lot different to the way that I thought, and it's a lot more attainable for clubs than I thought that it would be to create a nice, strong, healthy, positive, not necessarily elite as your point, but a nice, healthy, strong, positive environment by which people can play to the level that they want to.
Yeah, no doubt, Steve. I think there's a lot to come in this space, but if clubs are really wanting to get involved in that type of program, then I think there's a lot of ways they can do it. It's relatively inexpensive and not a huge setup involved, and something that can really have a big impact on their club.
Yeah, absolutely. Simone, thank you so much for sharing some time with us today. And we certainly look forward to having you back on the podcast in the future to talk about the other facets of your journey in sport, which are just phenomenal. So thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Simone Wern as much as I did. Not only did it explain to me, apart from lack of skill, knowledge, discipline, experience, why my elite sporting career never took off, but what I was surprised to learn in that discussion with Simone was that we don't need lots of technology, we don't need lots of bells and whistles and expensive equipment to create a really nice sort of high performance environment if you're choosing to in your club. It comes down to some really core things, and what Simone said that they track within softball within the elite program at softball was they're tracking the wellness of their players, the amount of sleep that they have, the numbers of swings and throws, the weights that they're doing, the loads that they're doing in the gym. And I found it absolutely fascinating that the number one priority of a high performance environment was actually looking at the sleep that their athletes were getting and trying to create a routine, go to sleep at the same time, wake up at the same time. And Simone even said that sleep is the most important part of the recovery cycle of their athletes. And I was joking around a little bit saying, well, in my own sports participation, we would go from the sporting to the club rooms to, you know, social events out after the game and not really pay any attention to that sort of recovery concept. And she did kind of raise the alarm bells about the characteristic of modern day, how we go to bed looking at our screens, whether it's our phones, whether it's the Netflix, and that's creating a disruptive sleep pattern as well. So I found that really, really interesting. The number two foundation of their elite performance was actually nutrition and hydration. So and that makes sense, doesn't it, really? Make sure our athletes have got the right fuel in their bodies and that they logically will perform better. And again, that's something we can do at the community sports club. Make sure that our players know what to eat, what not to eat on before the games, the day before the games, 2 days before the games, but also importantly, after the games. So again, I think about my own personal habits and routine, pasta before the game and then hot dog and chicken parma after the game. So again, not so great. The other key area that Simone talked about was the use of video, but again, not about the need for high quality video equipment and analytical tools. She was talking about just using your phone and some editing tools that are available on and sports analysis tools that are available free of charge just in the Google shops and the Android shops. So I found that really, really fascinating that she was getting so much value, even at the younger levels, by just showing replays and videos of how they're playing. Great coaching tool, great tool to coach the coaches and those really powerful. So all of those things are within the bounds and the means of any club, regardless of sport, regardless of how much money the club has. And I found that really, really, really exciting. So I hope you did too. Before we go, I'd just like to, as I always, always do, because we can't keep doing podcasts without the amazing support of the sports community members. So thank you to our sports community members. If you love the podcast, if you love the information that's coming through, then check out the membership. sportscommunity.com.au, click on the membership banner that's on the homepage, somewhere on the homepage it'll be. Check out the membership, and we'd love for you to become a sports community member as well. So until next week, I'm Steve Pallas, and thank you for being part of our sports community.